This is my third opportunity today to speak for the people of New York City in paying tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, hero of the struggle for justice and ways of peace. At noon today, in the historic chambers of the City Council of our City Hall, in the presence of the highest officials of our city and many who are here this evening, and of the proud members of his own family, I was privileged to bestow upon Dr. King the Medallion of Honor of the City of New York. Then, just a few hours ago, in the Waldorf Astoria, the City of New York gave an official reception in honor of Dr. King of the size and kind usually reserved for chiefs of state and heads of government. At that reception, I hailed Dr. King, as I do again here in this armory, as an adopted son of New York City. I said in the City Council, and I recall again tonight, that last summer, in the midst of our trouble that broke out in New York, I turned to Dr. King for counsel. And today I am proud to turn to him and wish him our heartiest congratulations. It is my proud privilege as mayor of this city to present to this audience a man of peace, but of irresistible force, Dr. Martin Luther King.
Civil Rights Movement and Negro Leadership in America, A. Philip Randolph. To the distinguished governor of this great state, Governor Rockefeller. To the great mayor of the city that I consider the greatest city in the world, Mayor Wagner. My dear friends and colleagues in the civil rights movement, distinguished platform guests, my brothers and sisters of Harlem, the great city of New York. Inadequate for me to communicate the deep joy that comes to my heart this evening as a result of your turning out in such large numbers and as a result of the very kind and gracious words that have been uttered prior to my standing in this position. Now, I can assure you that it is a great pleasure to return from Europe to Harlem and be in this meeting tonight in the capital of Negro America. I come here with a great sense of humility and deep sense of gratitude, for as I look back over our long days and our difficult days of struggle in the South, I realize that we would not have been able to carry on if it had not been for the support that the humble people of Harlem and the numerous churches of this community, friends of goodwill all over this nation, gave us. And so I want to thank you tonight for all of the support that you have given across the years in this struggle for freedom and human dignity. Now, naturally, I was deeply moved to be the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. As I said the other night in Oslo, Norway, I could not consider the Peace Prize as a tribute to me personally, but I see it as something much larger. The Nobel Peace Prize was an award to the whole civil rights movement in the United States and to its dedicated leaders. As I stand before you tonight, I do want to pay tribute to the great pilots of our movement who have sat at the controls and guided this mighty flight through turbulent and sometimes low-hovering clouds of adversity. But they've guided us on. Roy Wilkins, James Farmer, Whitney Young, John Lewis, Dorothy Hyde, and others. We are moving on today because we have mighty pilots. Tonight, I also want you to think of the fact that this plane never would have gotten up. A fellow by the name of Martin Luther King never would have been known in history, probably, if there hadn't been a mighty ground crew in Montgomery, Alabama, 50,000 strong. As I think back over the years that we have struggled, and as I think back over the night that we started in Montgomery, Alabama, I think of Rosa Parks, a magnificent member of the human race. I think of old Sister Pollard, a marvelous old lady, untutored but profoundly intelligent. One day someone stopped after we had walked many, many months and said, "Don't you want to ride?" She said, "No." And they said, "Aren't you tired?" She said, "Yes, my feet is tired, but my soul is rested." As I think about the ground crew, I think about the hundreds and thousands of nameless students who, through their courage, through their determination, and through their commitment to nonviolence, have given us a great movement which stands as a refreshing oasis in the midst of a desert land sweltering with the heat of injustice and exploitation. When in 1960 they started sitting down at segregated lunch counters to protest the conditions there, they were in reality standing up for the best in the American dream, carrying our whole nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. They constituted a great ground crew. I give tribute to them. I think of those who have given their lives in this struggle: Medgar Evers, Mickey Swerner, Andy Goodman, James Cheney, and others who have given their lives. must never forget them. But somehow I still believe that unmerited suffering is redemptive. It may be that from the blood of those young men, our whole nation will be redeemed, that we will rise to higher heights of brotherhood and understanding. I would also like to mention another fact, because somehow I never get out of debt. I live eternally in the red. All that I am, I owe. I'm indebted to so many people, and I'm so happy that some of them are here tonight, a wonderful father and mother, sister and brother. Great, abiding friend and a great leader in his own right, Ralph Abernathy, and his lovely wife. But above all that is a little lady here tonight. If I've been able to do anything in my humble efforts, I want you to know why I've been able to do it. If I've done anything in this struggle, it is because I've had behind me and at my side a devoted, understanding, dedicated, patient companion in the person of my wife, Coretta Scott King. Return home more determined than ever before to give my life to the struggle to remove racial injustice from every area of our nation's life. I return home more convinced than ever before that segregation is evil. I return home more convinced than ever before that segregation is nothing but a new form of slavery covered up with certain niceties of complexity. Segregation gives the segregator a false sense of superiority, and it so often leaves the segregated with a false sense of inferiority. We must make it clear all over this land that we are through with racial segregation now, henceforth, and forevermore. Gravely distressed over the news which reached us in Oslo that on the same day the civil rights movement was receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, a U.S. commissioner in Mississippi was dismissing charges against 19 of the men arrested by the FBI in connection with the brutal slaying of 3 civil rights voter registration workers in Mississippi last summer. The people of Europe shared this acute distress. And I'm convinced that the whole national conscience must be mobilized to deal with the tragic situation of violence, terror, and blatant failure of justice in Mississippi. And if something isn't done to give relief to the hundreds and thousands of black men and women in that state who are struggling merely to be free, then all men of goodwill will have no alternative but to boycott Mississippi products and refuse to buy those things in the country. Known 345 years of oppression now, we've known the dark and desolate night of man's inhumanity to man. We are still at the bottom of the economic ladder. So many things have happened in our lives to make us feel that we don't belong, that we don't have significance. But I come back to tell you tonight that you are somebody. I come back to tell you tonight that you are God's children made in His image. I come back to say to you tonight that every man from a base black to a treble white is significant on God's keyboard. Fleecy locks and black complexion cannot forfeit nature's claim. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in white and black the same. If I were so tall as to reach the pole, or to grasp the ocean at a span, I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this kind of self-respect and this sense of somebody-ness, we will be able to stand up and face the challenges ahead. I'm also returning home to join more vigorously the war against poverty. You may not realize how many poor people there are in our world. There are millions of people still going to bed hungry tonight all over our world. I've been in India. On those dark and lonely nights, I've seen with my own eyes thousands of people sleeping on the sidewalks at night. Had no beds to sleep in, no houses to go in. In Bombay alone, more than 1 million people sleep on the sidewalks at night. In Calcutta, more than 600,000. I've been all over Africa and seen the poverty of our black brothers and sisters. I've seen it in South America. Almost two-thirds of the peoples of the world are hungry. They've never seen a doctor or a dentist. They barely have the earnings to pay the taxes and certainly not to gain the basic necessities of life. I'm concerned about this, but in our own nation, there are some 10 million families comprising between 40 and 50 individuals who are poor people. They find themselves on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. If America is to be a great nation, she's got to solve this problem. And I don't believe anybody who will tell me that this problem can't be solved. I've just returned from Sweden and Norway. In those two countries, you have no unemployment. You have no slums. And if these countries in Scandinavia, much less powerful, much smaller resources, grapple with these problems of unemployment, the problems of slums and ghettos. What can we do in the United States if we have the will to do it, the richest nation in the world? The problem is that so often we don't see the poor. Mr. Harrington has a book entitled The Other America, and he calls the poor the invisible poor. This is so often true. Jesus tells us something that we must never forget. Inasmuch as ye do it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye do it unto me. Jesus tells us a story, a magnificent parable, a about a rich man named Dives and a poor man named Lazarus. If you remember that story, you will remember that Dives ended up going to hell. That is nothing in that story that tells us that Dives went to hell merely because he was rich. Jesus never made a universal indictment against all wealth. It is true that on one occasion he talked to the rich young ruler and said, sell all, but in that situation he was prescribing individual surgery rather than setting forth a universal diagnosis. And you will remember. If you will follow that parable in all of its symbolic structure, you will remember that when Dives was in hell, he had a conversation with a man named Abraham in heaven. Remember, it wasn't a millionaire in hell talking with a poor man in heaven. On the other end of that long distance call between heaven and hell was a real rich man. It was a little millionaire in hell talking with a multimillionaire in heaven. Dives went to hell because he passed by Lazarus every day and he never saw him. Dives went to hell because he allowed Lazarus to become invisible. Dives went to hell because he allowed the means by which he lived to outdistance the ends for which he lived. Dives went to hell because he maximized the minimum and minimized the maximum. Dives went to hell because he failed to use his wealth to bridge the gulf that separated him from Lazarus. And this is what we face today. We have the least of these among us. Who are the least of these? They are God's children who wake up every morning standing at tiptoe stance, not knowing what to expect next. Who are the least of these? They are the boys and girls who get up day after day and have nothing to look forward to because they can't find a job. Who are the least of these? They are the people who see life as nothing but a long and desolate corridor with no exit sign. Who are the least of these? They are people who see no hope, no way out. Who are the least of these? They are the people who have been deprived of educational opportunities. Who are the least of these? They are the people at the bottom of the economic ladder. It seems that I can hear someone standing before the God of the universe saying, Master, I've done my job. I've gotten a lot of education. I've been to the great universities. Yes, Master, I've done well, and I've been able to rise to the great heights of economic security. Seems that I can hear the master responding by saying, but I was hungry and ye fed me not. I was sick and ye visited me not. I was naked and ye clothed me not. I was in prison and you were not concerned about me. Therefore, you are not fit to enter the kingdom of righteousness. This is the meaning. So we have a challenge today, more than ever before, to get rid of poverty in our nation. And I assure you that I will give my life, whatever limited resources I have, to join with the great president of our nation and all of the great leaders in the various communities and states in our nation to engage in this war on poverty. This is one war in which we can't afford to have any conscientious objector. Everybody must join this war. I come to you saying that I still believe that America has the resources, and even the will, to respond to the challenges of this hour. I refuse to accept the idea that man is so caught up in this evil system of racial injustice that he can't rise to new, marvelous heights of brotherhood. I refuse to accept the idea that man is little more than a tiny vagary of whirling electrons or a wisp of smoke from a limitless smoldering. I refuse to accept the notion that man is nothing but a cosmic accident, a disease on this planet not soon to be cured. I refuse to accept the idea we can't rise up and reach the glad day of peace and brotherhood. So tonight I stand before you with a belief. I believe that the day can come right here in America, and all of God's children will live together as brothers. I believe there will be a day when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I believe there will be a day my brothers and sisters in Harlem will not have to live in rat-infested slums and depressing ghettos, but will be able to live with decency and honor and have their self-respect in personhood. I believe today. I believe that we have the resources to transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of peace. I believe that even Mississippi, a closed society, can be Mississippi, an open society one day. I believe that Mississippi, which has an affinity for the bottom, can one day have an affinity for the top. I believe somehow things can get better and dark yesterdays can be transformed into bright tomorrows. I believe that the dignity and the worth of human personality will be respected one day. I believe this and I live by it. This has been a marvelous day in my life, marvelous week in my life. I've been so happy and moved today by the great words that have been uttered by so many wonderful people, the great welcome that Mayor Wagner has given me to this great city. I've been so moved. I've been so moved by experiences that I had in Europe, meeting hundreds and thousands of people of goodwill. So I tell you, my friends, for the last 10 days, I've been on a literal mountaintop, having transfiguring experiences. Oh, we've had the privilege of meeting and talking with kings and queens, meeting and talking with prime ministers of nations, meeting and talking with the humble people of the land. I would love to stay here because it's a marvelous mountain. And I can tell you that it does mean a little something because I do live almost every day under the threat of death, and it is a fit contrast to have people saying nice things about you. It would be nice if I could stay up here. I wish I could stay on this mountaintop. For it isn't the usual pattern of my life to have people saying nice things about me. Oh, this is a marvelous mountaintop. I wish I could stay here tonight, but the valley calls me. I wish I could stay here tonight. I wish I could stay on this great mountain of transfiguration that has come to me over these last 10 days, but there are some 970-odd million of my black brothers and sisters down in the state of Mississippi, most of whom can't register and vote. I've got to go back to the valley, my friend. I wish I could stay here. I would love to continue to pass through the the lines and meet the great people of the world. Oh, there are some humble people down in the valley. Their little children are born every day. And clouds of inferiority are floating in their little mental skies because they don't think they're anybody. And somebody's got to give them hope. I've got to go back to the valley and try to give them a little hope. I wish I could stay on this mountain top tonight. I wish the last 10 days could somehow be stretched out ad infinitum, but somehow something reminds me. Millions and millions of God's children, and many of them are white, are caught in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society. And because of my concern for humanity, I've got to go back to the valley and try to help them. I wish I could stay here tonight. Oh, if I could stay here tonight, that would be one thing. But the valley calls me. There are those who need hope. There are those who need to find a way out. And so I thank you for allowing me to be on the mountaintop. I want to thank Oslo for allowing me to be on the mountaintop for a few days. But I've got to go back to the valley. And as I go back to this valley, I'll go back with a faith. And it isn't a weak faith. Oh, I say to you tonight, my friends, I'm not speaking as one who has never seen the burdens of life. I've had to stand so often amid the chilly winds of adversity, staggered by the jostling winds of persecution. I've had to stand so often amid the surging murmur of life's restless sea, but I go back with a faith. It is a faith that evil triumphant is somehow weaker than right defeated. I go back with a faith that truth crushed to earth will rise again. I go back with a faith that the mills of the gods grind slowly but exceedingly fine. I go back with a faith that you shall reap what you sow. With this faith, I go back to the valley. I will say, as I've said all over America, that working together, cooperating together, black and white together, we will be able to speed up the day when all of God's children will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.